Hello and welcome. I'm Amanda Mixon, and on behalf of CME Outfitters, I would like to welcome you and thank you for joining us for today's CMEO briefcase entitled Decoding Psoriatic Arthritis, Applying Evidence-Based Guidelines for Individualized and Effective Treatment. Today's program is supported by an educational grant from Janssen Biotech. I'm Amanda Mixon, and I have been in rheumatology for 17 years. I'm a physician assistant. I practice in Colorado. About 4 years ago, I co-founded the organization called RAP, or Rheumatology Advanced Practice Providers, and am the current sitting president of this organization. A wonderful organization for APPs in rheumatology. So let's go over our learning objectives for today. And essentially, it's to utilize guideline-based management strategies for patients with psoriatic arthritis. Hi, Michael. Thanks for coming in today. How are you doing?
Hi, Ms. Mixon. Things are okay. I've been having some symptoms that have been worrying me, and I was just hoping we could discuss it today.
So sorry to hear that you're having these worrying symptoms, but we'll see what we can do to help. Could you tell me a little bit more about your current symptoms?
Of course. They're mainly related to my job. I've been working as a construction worker for a long time. However, over the past year, I noticed that my psoriasis has started to get worse. I've started experiencing flares that I haven't had in a long time, and the itching and discomfort has made working uncomfortable, but it's been mostly manageable.
I'm so sorry to hear that you've been having these issues. We'll be sure to address this. I know you were referred by dermatology. Have you had any other issues or symptoms that have come up recently?
Yes, actually. I've started experiencing some pain and stiffness in my right hand and knee. At first, I thought this might be work-related, but then I started to notice my toes are getting swollen. And I mean, almost as big as like sausages. They're so big. And it's made work painful, which is why I was referred to by my dermatologist. Do you think this could be because of how physical my work has been over the years, or could this be related to my psoriasis? I noticed that my joint pain started around the same time that my rash started to become a problem again, so maybe they're related?
I really appreciate you giving me all this information and detail. There's definitely a chance that this could be related to your psoriasis. We'll have to take a look at your hands and feet. May I ask you some additional questions before we get started?
Sure, Ms. Mixon. Ask away.
Initially, we're going to talk about the patient interaction. So let's talk more about Michael. We met Michael. He's a 32-year-old Asian male who presents with unilateral pain in his right hand and knee and diffusely swollen toes. He works in construction and is finding it very difficult to work because he has pain and swelling. Patient was diagnosed with severe psoriasis at the age of 22. He was prescribed adalimumab, which showed improvement of his symptoms. However, he's currently experiencing skin flares and has a BSA, or body surface area, of 8%, and also has recently developed joint pain that has persisted for about 2 months. Because of the joint pain, dermatology has referred him to rheumatology and wants us to try to figure out, does he have psoriatic arthritis? His past medical history is significant for psoriasis, but he's otherwise healthy. He is married, has 2 children. He's active. He does drink 2 to 3 12-ounce beers daily. And his current medication is only adalimumab, 40 milligrams sub-Q every other week. And I will tell you that Michael's a very common type of patient that I see in my clinic, a younger male. And it's not uncommon for dermatology to send these patients to me all the time to find out, do I think they have psoriatic arthritis? I think what's important to note about Michael is he does drink, and he drinks pretty regularly. And so that can impact us when we're making treatment decisions for him. So that's the one thing that I would want you to also see here, because otherwise he's healthy and doesn't have any other comorbid conditions that would potentially impact us when we're making a treatment decision. So let's talk a little bit more in depth about how we make a diagnosis of psoriatic arthritis. We know that patients Typically, we'll have psoriasis first, and about 30% of patients with psoriasis can go on to develop psoriatic arthritis. In terms of the time frame, of course, I've seen patients that have had psoriasis for a very limited amount of time and then develop the joint pain. But more commonly, they'll usually have the psoriasis for several years and then go on to develop psoriatic arthritis symptoms. What does that look like? Well, it can affect different joints and it causes stiffness and swelling. It really is characterized by an asymmetric oligoarticular pattern, but could develop polyarticular arthritis over time. A classic finding of psoriatic arthritis will be dactylitis. And when you see it, it's pretty remarkable and you don't miss it. But it really does look like a sausage finger or toe. And essentially what happens there is this disorder affects the tendons as well as the joints. And so with dactylitis, the entire tendon sheath becomes diffusely swollen and ends up looking like a sausage. So oftentimes people will say, my finger or my toe ballooned up. It's really big and swollen. I had no history of trauma. That with a history of psoriasis is a very, very big clue that that patient could have psoriatic arthritis. In addition, like I just mentioned, the tendons can be involved, and where the tendon inserts to the bone is called the enthesis. And so patients with psoriatic arthritis can have what's called enthesitis, and that's again where that there's an inflammatory response in that area. So oftentimes when I'm seeing a patient that has a psoriasis history, and they come in for joint pain, of course, one of the first questions that I ask is, do you have any significant joint swelling? That's important. Do you have chronic tendon problems? Because oftentimes people will have, be told that they have tennis elbow or golfer's, elbow or chronic heel pain. That's a big one where the Achilles tendon inserts. So patients will often say, yeah, I've had plantar fasciitis several times. That's another clue that potentially they do have psoriatic arthritis. And then, of course, if they have the fat sausage finger, or toe, it's kind of a slam dunk because that's dactylitis. And again, a very classic presentation of somebody with psoriatic arthritis. In addition, it's important to remember that psoriatic arthritis is part of the family of the spondyloarthropathies. And what that means is that the spine can be involved, and we call that axial disease. They can have all areas of spinal involvement. And the way that I try to differentiate that, like let's go back to Michael, for example. So Michael's a construction worker. So he obviously is doing a lot of heavy lifting, and he might have back pain just associated with that. How I would differentiate that is I'd be asking the questions, do you have back pain that wakes you up in the middle of the night? Do you find that it is the worst first thing in the morning? Does it get better the more that you do? That is inflammatory back pain. So that would be more suspicious of psoriatic arthritis. If Michael were to say to me, no, I actually feel pretty good in the morning, but when I go to work by the end of my shift where I've been lifting and using my back and bending over, but it's the worst at night, then I would think more that's mechanical back pain. So that's a really important concept to understand because that can be a really big differentiator when you're trying to determine if somebody has an inflammatory arthropathy versus more degenerative or mechanical. So that's really important. And I think that with all of the types of spondyloarthropathies, again, including with psoriatic arthritis, trying to differentiate that can help guide you specifically when you're thinking about different treatment options for that patient. And I will tell you, sometimes they can have both, and so that can be challenging in addition to sometimes figure out. But really, those clues about waking up in the middle of the night, significant morning stiffness, and getting better with activity can be very big clues for you. It's also important to remember that patients with psoriatic arthritis mostly will have psoriasis first, but not always. And we know that about 15% of patients with psoriatic arthritis actually will not have psoriasis. And so there's definitely been times where I've seen a patient with dactylitis or very classic psoriatic arthritis changes on their exam and even potentially x-ray, but they have no history of psoriasis. You know, obviously I'm asking them, you know, for some of those places of psoriasis that maybe are more hidden. It's important when you see patients that you suspect psoriatic arthritis to do a really good joint exam and skin exam. Because some of the places that patients get psoriasis are often embarrassing places, you know, the buttocks, for example. And so you do have to ask those questions, the ears, the scalp. And so if you suspect psoriatic arthritis and it's not obvious where the patient has psoriasis, just do a really good exam so that you can kind of see. Maybe it'll just be as simple as nail pitting, which is also a common finding of psoriasis. And so it's important just to remember that, that can be psoriasis. So really do a good nail exam as well. Sometimes, though, it can still be challenging to try to figure it out, but I always tell patients, you know, my job is to put pieces of a puzzle together. And sometimes I don't have all of the pieces, but the longer that you practice, you will start to kind of have this gestalt about what's inflammatory and what's not. In terms of how we differentiate between different arthritis types, you know, again, really talking about that morning stiffness, that's going to be really important because that's very suggestive of an inflammatory process. So cytokines kind of peak in the middle of the night and it causes this gelling phenomenon that patients experience first thing in the morning. So that's number one clue in terms of differentiating between an inflammatory pain or non-inflammatory pain. You know, osteoarthritis is also very common. Again, you kind of tend to see that more in older patients, but of course, I do see it sometimes in younger patients. It really just kind of depends. And again, mostly those patients will say, my pain is the worst at night. I feel better in the morning because I've been able to rest. And so, again, you know, I think those are just kind of important clues about trying to figure out what is inflammatory versus what is not. Of course, your physical exam, the history is very important, of course, but then your physical exam will help guide you. Do you see any synovitis? When you press on the entheses, because we have them all over our body, is it painful for the patient when you press on those areas? It can be sometimes challenging to actually really see enthesitis. That's where sometimes an ultrasound can be helpful if you have that in your practice. Certainly an MRI can also be helpful, but actually pressing on those entheses can give you clues. Of course, if you see dactylitis, that's kind of a slam dunk. But again, or any evidence of synovitis. You know, as I said at the beginning, you know, again, this can affect one or many joints. But I typically will see it again in this asymmetric pattern, which is somehow in another way that you can differentiate this from rheumatoid arthritis, where patients will have more of a symmetric, a small joint arthritis. Again, if for rheumatoid, it's more common in women than it is in men. For psoriatic arthritis, you know, think middle life, and men and women are equally affected. So hopefully that's some clues for you if you do see a patient with psoriasis that comes in with joint pain to help you differentiate if you believe they may have psoriatic arthritis. Now, our first question. So to diagnose Michael, we really do need to understand the diagnostic criteria. Which of the following are diagnostic criteria specific for psoriatic arthritis? The answer to this question is D, current dactylitis or history of dactylitis. I talked a lot about that in the previous slide. And so again, that is an important tool for diagnosing psoriatic arthritis. Again, it's one of those classic findings of a patient with psoriatic arthritis. And so definitely you're going to want to look at the hands and the feet. And if you see evidence of this, the patient likely has psoriatic arthritis. So let's move on to actually discussing how we diagnose psoriatic arthritis. And I'll tell you that It's a bit challenging because we don't have, you know, a particular lab that we can order. There are some X-ray findings that I'll talk about here in just a moment, but I'll tell you, psoriatic arthritis can be challenging. So if you do find it to be somewhat challenging, you are not alone. It took me several years before I really started to feel very comfortable making this diagnosis with confidence. There's different ways that, you know, we can utilize and different criteria. CASPAR criteria is a good one, and I would encourage you to study this. And you know, if you certainly if you are seeing patients with psoriatic arthritis or you're making that diagnosis, this can be really a helpful tool. Remember, with rheumatoid arthritis, we do have some blood work, a rheumatoid factor, an anti-CCP that definitely can help, you know, guide us. We do not have that here, and so that's where you really have to kind of, you know, use obviously your gestalt, your physical exam, your history, and then you should be able to determine if this patient does or does not. So let's specifically talk about the criteria. Patients have to have an inflammatory articular disease. So what that means is they have to have inflammation in the joints that you can see, so synovitis, the spine, that inflammatory back pain, sacroiliitis that you can see on potentially an X-ray or MRI. Or again, that enthesitis that we talked about, that I talked about, as well as 3 or greater points. If you have those features, you likely have psoriatic arthritis with good confidence. And what those points are is evidence of psoriasis. So if they currently have psoriasis, that already gives you 2 points. So you're almost there. If they have a personal history of psoriasis or a family history of psoriasis, they will get a point if they have psoriatic nail dystrophy. As I said earlier, with rheumatoid arthritis, you know, we have some blood tests. And it's important that you differentiate between rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis. They look differently, but as part of our criteria, a negative test for rheumatoid factor. So again, if you have a patient that you see that has inflammation in one of those areas, psoriasis, and a negative rheumatoid factor, you have met criteria for psoriatic arthritis. Dactylitis, which again, I've talked about a few times because I really do want that to hone in on something that's really classic with psoriatic arthritis. If they have a current if they have current dactylitis that you can see, or a history of dactylitis. Again, I talk to my patients all the time about this when I see them, if I'm suspicious of this. Have you ever had anything like that happen? And it's interesting how many patients will say, yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, a few years ago, I had a toe that became swollen. I went to the urgent care. They thought it was an infection, et cetera. And it, you know, it finally cleared up. So just important to ask those questions. And then you get another point if you actually can see the radiographic evidence of what we call juxta-articular new bone formation. I will say that that's a later finding of psoriatic arthritis. So with all the tools that we have now, you know, hopefully we don't get to the place where you actually see that because we want to prevent that from happening. So what are the pros and cons of the CASPAR criteria? Well, you know, it was developed to be an international collaborative cohort of psoriatic arthritis experts. So that's really good. It's very easy to use. You know, again, I often will put a CASPAR criteria, not necessarily because I'm questioning whether the patient has it, but sometimes, especially with insurance, if you're trying to get a particular medication, it can be useful to say patient, you know, meets CASPAR criteria to make the diagnosis of psoriatic arthritis. It does have good sensitivity and specificity. It allows psoriatic arthritis patients to be classified without psoriasis when other features are present. And again, I think that's important because, as I said earlier, 15% of patients with psoriatic arthritis will not have psoriasis. And again, if you put them on appropriate treatment, maybe they never develop psoriasis. It allows the patients with a positive rheumatoid factor also to be classified. It's validated and established in early psoriatic arthritis cohorts and across multiple ethnicities. And really, it's the most common adopted classification in modern RCT and LOC. So I think it's a really good tool for you to consider using. Again, it's really easy. You know, print it, have it, you know, at your desk if you need to reference it. But I think it's a good tool. And it can be helpful again when you are particularly trying to pick different treatments, which is what we're going to go over now. How do you choose? You make a diagnosis of psoriatic arthritis, and now what? What do you do? So we have different classifications. We have different guidelines that we can use, and we have a lot of them. We've got three. So initially, you know, we have the American College of Rheumatology, along with the National Psoriasis Foundation. Those guidelines were published in 2018. In 2019, EULAR, so the European Alliance of Associations for Rheumatology, updated their guidelines. And then most recently, we have the GRAPPA guidelines, which is the Group for Research and Assessment of Psoriasis and Psoriatic Arthritis. And those were updated in 2022. I think it can be helpful if you, you know, want to look through these guidelines. It can help kind of guide you. In terms of personally, I find GRAPPA to be the most helpful that I use on a daily basis. And I say that because it talks a lot about a domain-based approach, a treat-to-target approach, which we'll talk about here momentarily. And I think it's easy to follow, and it really does help me. So that's the one that I actually follow. I like that it was updated in 2022 because this is a really an evolution, a landscape of medications. I always like to date myself when I'm doing lectures. I started rheumatology in 2007, and at that time, we had very little options for the treatment of psoriatic arthritis. And in fact, we only had one type of biologic therapy approved for psoriatic arthritis. And so, which was great. I mean, again, even to start practice in the era of biologics was still pretty incredible because prior, I mean, patients just did terribly. They were in wheelchairs. They were disabled. And so the era of the biologics has really changed how we treat this disease, and patients can live normal, happy, healthy lives. The issue, however, was if a patient, you know, didn't do well or couldn't take it or it was, you know, or failed it, we just had very, very limited options. And so the reason I like GRAPPA is because it takes a domain-based approach to can help you determine which medication is the most beneficial based on the specific domains that the patient has. So that's the one that I like. But again, you might look through ACR or EULAR and say, I really like EULAR, I really like ACR, and you can go between them. So that's what's also nice too. If you're feeling confused, you know, or it's just not making sense to you, look up the other ones. But I do think it's important to have an understanding of guidelines. These are done by thought leaders in rheumatology, in psoriatic arthritis, but really can help guide you in terms of giving patients the best possible outcomes. So our next question, a treat to target approach is mentioned in psoriatic arthritis guidelines as a preferred method of treatment. What is an important component of the treat to target approach? The correct answer is A. The goal of treat to target should be remission or low disease activity. Again, I'm going to date myself here, but back when I first started, we didn't really talk about remission. We didn't talk about low disease activity in psoriatic arthritis. And we actually kind of told patients that, you know, well, this is somewhat of a mild disease process. It's not as bad as rheumatoid arthritis. And, you know, maybe you can just manage things with very little. Maybe you don't need treatment at all. I think part of that was we really didn't have a great understanding of it. We didn't obviously have as many treatment options. And we've just really learned so much that psoriatic arthritis can and, you know, will potentially be a destructive disorder that can lead to damage. And so we really do want to approach our patients with an aggressive treatment strategy to get them into remission so that they don't develop joint damage. I say this to my patients all the time. Once damage happens, we can't do anything about it. And so it's really, really important that we catch them early, that we treat them aggressively, that we follow up with patients, you know, very regularly to achieve those goals. And then our patients can do very well and live happy, healthy lives, which is what I tell patients. The other thing I tell patients, and again, you can feel free to steal all of these things, but I say, I want you to feel how you did before you had this disease. And I really do not want to settle for less than that because we have way too many good options for you to continue to struggle. So I say that to patients. It sets the tone for patients that I am in this with them. We are a team and I want them to do well. It's also really important with our patients that we hold them accountable too. And I really have a lot of discussions with my patients about that too, because I do believe that a lot of it is on them as well. I can talk till I'm blue in the face about what treatment I think is appropriate, but if they don't take the medication, you know, or do the things I'm talking to them about, then it just doesn't work. And so it's really multifaceted, and I think it's really important that we also make sure our patients are advocates for themselves. So I definitely approach that. So what exactly does it mean to have a treat-to-target approach? Well, it began as a strategy for managing diabetes and heart disease, and now we utilize it for inflammatory diseases like psoriatic arthritis. We also use this very frequently with rheumatoid arthritis. And medications can be adjusted over time to reach predetermined treatment goals, usually remission. Like I said to you, I tell my patients, I want you to be in remission. I want you to feel like you did before you had this. Now, again, that doesn't mean I can promise that you'll never have a flare up. It doesn't mean I can promise that we may not need to adjust things, but that's the ultimate goal. And if you and I work together, we can achieve that. It really does involve monitoring with regular adjustments based on whether the goal is reached. So you might say, well, how do you make that decision? You know, those are goals that you really should be making with your patients at the very beginning. This is what I'm looking for. Because the other thing that's really important to remember is that a patient's goal could be different than what your goal is. And over time, I've really learned how to hone in on that. For example, we want our patients to not have any, you know, disease progression. We want to see their x-rays be clean, look normal. We don't want to see any dactylitis. We don't want to see any enthesitis. We want their skin to be clear. They may say, I just want to be able to go to my job. I just want to be able to lift my children. And so you really have to determine what's important to them, because then that will help guide you in terms of as you are setting goals and that you both can kind of understand. So why does it matter? Well, it really does. Patients do much better in a more treat to target approach. Here was one study called the TACOPA trial, and it had 206 patients, and this was early psoriatic arthritis patients that were DMARD naive. And they stratified it into two groups. So the tight control group and kind of the more standard approach. And so the standard approach was basically this treatment of, you know, that a rheumatologist would make at their discretion. Okay, so it wasn't very specific to one particular thing. The tight control group, patients were started on methotrexate. That dose was increased to 25 milligrams at week 6 if it was tolerated. And then if patients were still not controlled, then it was adjusted and additional medications were considered and added. And again, into trying to achieve that minimal disease activity, which is what we're looking for. If it still was not achieved, and again, see, these patients were coming in very regularly, then patients were either given, they were given a TNF medication, an anti-TNF medication, if they had greater than 3 tender or swollen joints, or an alternative DMARD plus methotrexate if no minimal disease activity, but with less than 3 active joints. And again, so things were continued to be adjusted very regularly until we achieve that remission. And as you can see by our odds ratio, if patients were in that tight control group, they were at a much a higher likelihood to achieve an ACR 20, 50, and 70 response, and also at a higher likelihood of achieving a PASI 75 score. So thus proving that it is really important that we get these patients into control really as soon as possible, and that we do adjust things as we need to. How would we develop a treat-to-target oriented treatment plan for Michael? You know, I think this is really important because I think part of it is we have to look at Michael's specific comorbidities, which for him, luckily, are nothing. He's in good health. He does drink, and so that could potentially impact us in terms of some of our medications, like methotrexate, for example. We maybe want to avoid that in a patient that drinks 2 to 3 a day. And so, all things to consider. But that's really where we can utilize our guidelines. And so I'm going to go a little bit more in depth into what that looks like, and specifically talking about the GRAPPA guidelines. And this is a domain-based approach spanning 6 domains of psoriatic arthritis. But what I also really like about this guideline is that it considers comorbidities that impact treatment, provides discussion and guidance on psoriatic arthritis related topics. This can include a cardiovascular risk, obesity, fatty liver disease, hepatitis, tuberculosis, herpes zoster, the risk of non-melanoma skin cancer, osteoporosis, fibromyalgia, and depression and anxiety. And I will tell you that a lot of our psoriatic arthritis patients have other comorbidities. So we really do have to consider all of these things, particularly when we are treating them and what treatment decision that we make, what medication we give them. It's all important. The other thing that I always talk to my patients about with any inflammatory arthritis is, in fact, I had this discussion today with a patient. Cardiovascular risk is a very, very real thing in our patients. And so I definitely encourage you to talk to your patients about this. I often will say, because you will see patients that will say things like, I don't really want to take that medication. It's just my joints. And what I try to really hone in on is that this is more than just a joint disease. These are systemic processes. If you have the inflammation in your joint, you also have that inflammation going through your lungs, going through your heart, you are at a higher risk for cardiovascular disease. Also, why it's really important for our patients to see their primary care providers regularly, having their routine, checkups, that is really important. Our patients are more likely to be obese. They're more likely to have fatty liver disease if they are psoriatic arthritis. So again, all things to take into consideration, not only when you pick treatment, but as I mentioned before, this idea that we put our patients in, we have to put some of this on our patients to also be advocates for themselves, right? And that isn't just a medication. Maybe it's a dietary change. Maybe it's starting to exercise regularly. It's trying to mitigate some of those other risks. And so I really do try to talk to my patients about that every single visit, to try to, again, get them to the place where they are under the best control. So now let's specifically talk about the GRAPPA guidelines. I know this can seem daunting to you, and I don't want it to be. What basically this shows us is that based on the domain that the patient has, it can help guide you in terms of which MOA to choose. So for example, if you have a patient with peripheral arthritis and axial disease as part of their presentation, that might gear you towards one particular medication versus another. If you have a patient with nail disease, that could potentially make you choose one option over another. IBD is another feature associated with psoriatic arthritis. Now, of course, not all patients with psoriatic arthritis have inflammatory bowel disease, but it's important to note that if they do, if they have that, that will definitely guide you in terms of which treatment to choose and also potentially which treatments to avoid. It's the same thing with uveitis because only certain medications can be useful for uveitis. And so again, when you have a patient, please look at all of these domains and put your patient in and say, okay, this patient has nail disease, psoriasis, and dactylitis. I also see peripheral arthritis. And that's pretty easy to go down the trail there and see, okay, this is what I should choose. And if that doesn't work, I can change to this. And if that doesn't work, I can change to that. You also, again, really need to consider the other comorbidities, i.e., some of the cardiovascular risk factors, et cetera, that can impact your choice of therapy and/or guide your monitoring. Really important to continue to see these patients regularly, so that if you need to, you can make a change. I want to take just 1 minute here to talk about changing therapy. It is important that we not be afraid to change therapy, but also it's important to not change too fast because you don't want to cycle through all of your options. And so sometimes I've definitely seen patients maybe that I'm seeing for a second opinion, and they have cycled through all of the options because they were changed really rapidly. So just remember to set the expectation that all of these medications take time to work. And, you know, it's important to see patients regularly. You can adjust things, maybe add in an oral DMARD, maybe add in a biologic to your oral DMARD. But just remember, these take times. This takes time for your patients to really achieve remission. And I do think that's important to set that expectation. They're not going to, I mean, maybe they'll feel dramatically better after the first dose of something, but that would be unusual. It really does take several weeks before patients really notice the optimal benefit. And so setting that expectation can also be helpful so that A, patients don't just stop the medication if it's not working, so that they do give it the appropriate amount of time. And then you're not cycling through things too fast. So I do think that that's important as well. And kind of taking all these things into consideration. I would encourage you to look through these different MOAs and start to familiarize yourself with why one might be a better option for this and maybe you need to avoid for that. It is important as you're thinking about treating these patients. But again, this is really the guideline that I use when I'm diagnosing psoriatic arthritis. Now, discussing our treat-to-target approach, what treatment options are appropriate for Michael and how do we determine the most optimal treatment? Well, let's go back to our GRAPPA guidelines here, right? So we know Michael has the peripheral arthritis. It sounded like he potentially has some axial disease, you know, and I think, you know, we know he has psoriasis. The wonderful thing about Michael is he has no other comorbidities. And so, which you can definitely see in younger patients. I mean, the only thing that he does do is he drinks regularly. So that, because of that reason, I would probably avoid methotrexate in him. You know, we have a couple of options. You know, psoriasis is flaring as well. So truly in Michael's case, what I probably would do is I would probably change his MOA. So I'd probably take him off of the adalimumab. And then I would probably change him to either an IL-17 or a 23. That's probably what I would do in his case. Again, the beauty of this is there's not really a right answer. And this is what I say to my patients too. If we make the wrong decision, if this doesn't work, then obviously we have room to change or add, et cetera. But that's probably what I would do for in Michael's case, just given that he's dealing with both skin and joint symptoms and he has no other comorbidities that we really need to think about, but he does drink alcohol. So I would definitely want to make sure I'm checking his labs to see what his LFTs look like, et cetera. But the nice thing about the 17s and the 23s is there's really no lab monitoring. And so that's another reason why I think Michael would probably benefit from one of those. That's what I would probably do. So again, let's go back to him. He's a 32-year-old Asian male who presents with this unilateral pain in his right hand and knee with diffusely swollen toes. So he's got the dactylitis as well. He's finding it's trouble to work because of pain and swelling. He's got that severe psoriasis that he's had for quite a while. The adalimumab seems like it's lost efficacy. He's got more psoriasis, joint pain. And as I mentioned, that's probably what I would change Michael's treatment to. In terms of, you know, what should we could be concerned about? The drinking. He's drinking too much. He's going to end up with fatty liver, you know, potentially maybe weight changes associated with that. So I would really talk to Michael as well about limiting his alcohol consumption. And in terms of how often I would follow up with Michael, I probably, you know, when I start a new medication, my typical plan is I usually see people every, you know, in 6 weeks after starting the medication. And then if they're doing pretty well on it, every 3 months or so is when I see patients. If they're doing really well, I'll push it out to 6 months, but I don't do that until I have the patient into remission. SMART goals. So what do we take away from all of this, right? Like, what are the things that I would hopefully have you look at when you're thinking about this? And I hope today's CMEO briefcase program was helpful to you and that you have a better understanding of how to diagnose psoriatic arthritis, as well as how to best utilize the guidelines to determine treatments for our patient. So let's really quickly go over those, which are specific, measurable, attainable, and relevant and timely. Number one, utilize CASPAR criteria when considering diagnosis for patients presenting with psoriatic arthritis. Number two, improve outcomes in patients with psoriatic arthritis with evidence-based treat-to-target methods. And then lastly, develop a customized treatment plan for patients with psoriatic arthritis based on domain-based guideline-directed therapy. And again, that's why even printing off that GRAPPA guideline, I have it in my office. That way I can, if I'm just a little confused, I'm not exactly sure which direction to go, I'll just look at it and then it can help guide me, and hopefully it will help guide you as well. Today's CMEO briefcase is part two of a three-part series of case-based activities. I hope that you'll check out the other two activities in the series. And in addition, you can see more resources on psoriatic disease at our dermatology hub on CME Outfitters website. To receive CME CE credit for this activity, participants must complete the post-test and evaluation online. Participants will be able to download and print their certificate immediately upon completion. Be safe, take care of yourself so you can provide the best care for your patients. I hope this was helpful.